If you mean the guy I crashed into with my scooter, then yes, I remember him. I could picture him more easily now if I'd actually knocked him over and caused some injury instead of bouncing off his shoulder and me being the one sent sprawling, or if he and his wife had known enough Italian to do more than keep apologising in a loping, formal sing-song, "Ye displeases me," over and over again. But I'll have a think about it. Well, he wasn't selling flowers, forgive me. I'm not one to suggest that the colour of your skin should determine what you do in this city, or that this guy was trespassing somehow by not haunting the Spanish Steps with single roses. But he wouldn't be the first Asian flower seller if he did. I can tell you this. They were strolling hand in hand towards the Piazza Navona at night, and they were dreaming about Caravaggio. If all I'd done was whistle past them and scuff their shoes slightly more, I could have told you that much. There's a saying here. When people come to Rome, they imagine that's how we live. Not that I'm criticising the guy. He might have believed that everyone he saw in the city with pale, smooth skin like steamed milk frowning was a model for artists now as then, but he had no reason to expect one to ride straight into him on the Corso del Rinascimento. He wasn't responsible, and even so, he apologised. Maybe he wanted to prove he was English. More likely, I had a look on my face that only an apology could erase. I didn't want the words from him, though, but from Antonio. It was his scooter I was racing to keep up with. But his wasn't weighed down with books and papers from university, and in any case, had greater power than mine. I realised this as I scrambled about on the curbside, gathering my papers together with the wrong apologies ringing in my ears. Antonio's scooter had the power to open a permanent gap between us in less time than it took to notice something was wrong. Like the English, not flower seller's shoulder, like my knee that scraped the curb on my way down, the notes and essay plans from university were a sore point. The more you insist on scrutinising the art, the more you clip it with needless context, the more you torch it with analysis, the more it decays, Antonio had said. But you studied with art historians yourself, I said. Okay, you rejected them a few days before they rejected you, but you've been there. You've set out to do the same things. You shouldn't be following me, he said, dropping an octave in his voice, that thing he did, and it so annoyed me when he wanted to make a sombre point like a kindly owned animal in a Disney cartoon. It's not you I'm following. But it was, of course. Of course I was following him. No man makes you who you are, but the man your man wishes to be, that's the one you're both trying to catch. How many find themselves in that sort of relationship? He's young and beautiful, and as far as either of you know, he's a genius. That nobody else recognises what you know, what you were the first to see with your Mary Magdalene eyes, only proves how essential you are. Your love verifying his dreams is almost a creative act in itself. Furthermore, as his model, I even signed his work with my body. Of course, it helps when he's beautiful and still young. When that's no longer the case, you're less aware of how pivotal your belief is for him, more than it's just you who's doing the believing. While I merely sat for him, there was no problem. It was starting to think of myself as an artist's model that caused the rift. I told him I'd joined a discussion group with other sitters. It was like I was joining the union. Working practices, he said. Conditions. The condition is you stand there and your skin reflects the light, and that's that. But I didn't want any more than that. In the middle of three Caravaggios in the French church, San Luigi de Franceschi, showed an elderly St. Matthew at work, guided by an angel. There was just enough light to see that they were there together. The painter told us nothing else about the room. The chiaro itself was partially scuro, merely a threat of brightness, night through a break in closed shutters. You could see the saint's face well enough to detect his calm acceptance of the drawing night. And what I saw were the model's own eyes, quiet and gleaming. I'd mentioned that to Antonio. You can tell Caravaggio's had him twisting his head in all directions, down at your quill, up to the angel. Come on, baby, give me devotion. And that look on his face, that's when he hit the spot, caught the shaft of light in his iris like a prospector sifting through to the gold. The model's the one who's found that pose. You've got it all wrong, he said. You want to start identifying with those shapes up there? Here's a footnote for you. This wasn't the original section of the triptych, you know. It's just a contractual obligation. The first time he painted it, Matthew still resembled a guy who used to grub around for taxes before his vocation, only now he collected souls. The angel was beside him, like they were comrades drinking together, but Caravaggio painted Matthew with dirty feet, and that wasn't tolerated, not on a saint. So we got this instead. That glint in his eyes saying, I've got a modelling job at someone else's expense. It's Caravaggio calling him a blackleg. I said, what a privilege it must have been for the French settlers to witness the private squabbles of the locals in their own church. But you say there was another reason to remember that morning there in the San Luigi de Francesi. Really? The English couple I later hit with my scooter, they were there too. Now you mention it, maybe I do remember. The church had been filling up. There was Antonio, me, mourners arriving for a funeral, and I guess tourists too. I didn't see him, and if I did, I doubt I'd have recognised him again when my scooter bounced off his shoulder. I did notice someone take a photograph, two in fact, one of St. Matthew's calling on the left-hand fresco and with the angel in the centre, the other of Matthew's execution in Ethiopia with Caravaggio himself among the watchers. I didn't pay attention to who was taking the photographs, but I remember the camera flashes as the priest began the funeral service and then pairs of feet hurrying out of the church, not wishing to intrude. 2. My friend, I know just who you mean. I saw him twice. I saw him take a photograph as well. Odd, don't you think? I travel around the same streets every day. There's bricks I recognise in walls that greet me like an old colleague. I've read some graffiti more times than the Pope's read the Bible. There's tide marks from the Rhine on my shoes and a concrete car between two lanes of traffic on the ring where my buttocks have worn two grooves on the roof. But most men and women I never see again from one day to the next. But this one, we met in Neumarkt and he was taking photographs of trams and election posters. He must have picked me out from the crowd because I was wearing a mask of Herr Schröder. I suppose it was a souvenir for him, coming face to plastic face with the man about to become Chancellor, so he aimed his camera at me from about 10 meters away. I didn't mind. I was wearing another man's face, so why complain that he was taking my whole body away with him? I'll wave for him to come closer. He stood just in front of where I was sitting. I lifted the mask so it sat on my head like a grinning helmet and looked straight at the camera. He took his photograph. I was happy to help. Later, I was sitting on the concrete car, shouting at all the other cars. I wore my mask and urged them to vote for me. I will lead you, and my many wives will wash your feet. The cars ignored me, so I looked towards the people on the pavement, and I saw him again outside a restaurant with a friend drinking Kölsch. You cannot measure recognition when it comes like that. You cannot comprehend the wonder at seeing the same man in two different places, knowing he'll not stay long enough to become a stranger. You see, I've been misplaced for so long, I've forgotten whether I arrived or was born here. Seeing him again reminded me that my presence in this city is as concrete as the car I sit upon. I get moved along like the trams, covered up like the old election posters, but I'm the Dom, the Dombrücke, the skyline, the beer. I'm someone else's memory of the city. I am home. Thank you. Thanks. And this second piece, which I'll finish with, is also the piece that appears in Liverpool Stories, and it's called Microdrama.
Was it any good? What?
No. It seemed at first that they were fighting.
My instincts are still good.
A few steps nearer. And it looked like dancing. Alongside them, I could see they were staggering. By the time I was that close, they had begun kissing. Sometimes, all you need to know is that a thing happened. The time and place seem unnecessary embellishments. It was early to be pissed and pressed up against a wall along a dark street in the city centre, even on a Friday. Any more of the setting and there's a risk of smothering the scene. Maybe it's enough to know they were that drunk. He looked punch drunk as well. The way he was hunched over her, his lean towards her lips, suggested he'd gone the distance. The description tells us more, but explains nothing. There's no allegorical substance in my memory of her blotched face and blonde hair limply holding back the roots like Gene Wilder gone to seed. I might have had more of a part to play if I'd been on my way to do anything notable or to witness some other reproduction of one of Goya's nightmare etchings. Instead, I had a chop suey roll with too much vinegar, and 10 minutes later, I was again walking down School Lane. They had staggered across the road and were now swaying next to the pub entrance, as though during the last tune before the lights go up. It may just have been that they were fighting. As I passed them, he leaned in, and I heard her speak. "No, you're married to me sister." And then she said it again. "No, you're married to me sister." The words might have been forgotten by both of them come the morning, or disregarded far earlier. For me, her lines stood like a sonnet, a soap opera in miniature, but they were unmediated, and the microdrama was all the more resonant for that. There was a group of drinkers in their Friday night bevy and trousers approaching from the opposite direction. I thought about suggesting that they listen in. Had I framed it though, the dialogue would have become a grotesque caricature, certain to disappoint. Far better to say nothing, simply to observe the dignity of a moment gone past. Thank you very much. Thank you.